Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
This is a message for pastors and lay leaders of Missouri Synod congregations. As we're now rounding a corner on a year of COVID lockdown and measures, how has that affected your attendance and giving? In 25% of our churches, giving has actually gone up. Surprised? Why are some churches struggling while others are thriving? Here at LCMS Stewardship and the whole Office of National Mission team, we have answers and we have help for you and your church today. LCMS.org/stewardship.
Science is amoral. Science is a method. It is a method of determining facts. It is a method of gaining knowledge. It doesn't have a right or wrong. Science can't tell us what's right and what's wrong.
That's what we're made for. Christians live on the rough edge and confess Christ.
I think that, you know, when the Lutherans embrace homosexual practices, they find, in quotes, Lutheran reasons for doing so. They will invent their own kind of theological rationale for it.
One of the most comforting things that people find when they turn to the Psalter is that all of the turmoil in their own hearts and minds, all of the trouble in their own daily lives that they feel and experience, all of this is right there on the pages of the Bible.
Midwest turkey hunters love listening to Issues Etc. in the spring.
I know that my congregation's practice changed with the pandemic. One of the things that was taken out of the worship service was the passing of the offering plate. Ordinarily, that took place at a certain point in the divine service, and there was even a piece of music that was played during the gathering of the offering called an offertory. Both of those things went out the door. The offering plate moved literally out the door into the narthex, where people would drop their offerings before or after the service. And of course, a lot of the giving had already moved online. Does this mean the end of passing the plate, so to speak, on Sunday morning? There's a Religion News Service story that asks that very same question. Greetings and welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about church offering plates post-pandemic with Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator of LCMS Stewardship. And then a little bit later, we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. You can vote when we play by giving us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to discuss church offering plates post-pandemic, Pastor Heath Curtis. He's pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Warden, Illinois, and Zion Lutheran Church in Carpenter, Illinois, and he's coordinator for LCMS Stewardship. Heath, welcome back.
Always good to be with you, Todd.
I mentioned this recent Religion News Service story suggesting that the offering plate may become a thing of the past post-pandemic. What do you make of it?
Yeah, so, I mean, I get it that congregations have cut back on all the physical touchings, right? We don't shake hands anymore. We're all wearing full-body surgical gowns everywhere in public. And so the offering plate was an easy thing to say, well, here's a community item that we all touch that we don't need to touch. Now, who knows what the state of the very best research will be a week from now on whether or not that's really necessary. But a lot of churches have gone that direction. And the broader question here is, why do we do anything that we do in worship? And our Lutheran confessions are very clear that all the ceremonies in church, I mean, if you think about it, then unlike the Old Testament, where ceremonies are dictated down to what the priest should wear, where the people stand, down to how the temple is to be decorated, in the New Testament, there are very few ceremonies that are instituted by God, right? Most everything is left to our freedom. So, I mean, there's baptism, right? There's an obvious ceremony that has to go with baptism. You have to wash somebody with water. That's what the word baptize means. for the Lord's Supper, you have to somehow distribute the bread and wine, which is the body and blood of Jesus, and people have to eat and drink it. But other than that, there are no ceremonies dictated by the New Testament in the way that the Old Testament have things dictated. So our Lutheran confessions very wisely point out that in the New Testament, we have to pay attention to the ceremonies because in a weird way, they're almost more, the ceremonies we do in the New Testament are almost more meaningful in this sense than they were in the Old Testament because we get to choose them. We get to decide what we do, what we actually do in worship. And that means we had to sit down and ponder what's the best way to do these things. What are the ceremonies we're going to put around the Word of God and His sacraments? So since they're fully in our choice, the choice we make really says a lot about what we believe. And so the Lutheran confessions say, so the point of a ceremony, the reason you pick one ceremony over another is to teach the people. And also, you know, make no mistake, every choice you make about ceremonies is a ceremony. So even if you say, well, I don't want to have ceremonies in worship, our worship's going to be super simple. Well, that's a ceremony. Yeah, I mean, anytime you have people together, doing any activity together, those are ceremonies. The rules of tennis are ceremonies. Where the umpire stands in baseball is a ceremony. So it's just, how are we going to do these things together? So this choice is, do you take an offering in public, do you not? Well, let's think about the traditional ceremony and how that happens. So the plate is passed communally. People put their offerings in. And so there's a public aspect to this. Everybody's doing this act together. So there's one aspect of that ceremony. Then the offering plate is brought up to the altar. And there's some kind of acknowledgement of this offering then toward the altar. You know, the offering is typically in most of our churches elevated at the altar while the pastor faces the altar. Now, why do we do that? Well, it's not so, I mean, the pastor doesn't count the money. The pastor doesn't make the bank deposit. I mean, that's a really conscious choice. It's not from necessity. And so we need to ask, what is this teaching? Well, the first part of that ceremony, that the plate is going around to everybody in church, this is teaching that everybody should be making an offering, that everybody can make an offering, that nobody's offering is too small to not be worthy of having the plate passed to them, and nobody's offering is so big that they should get some kind of special way to give their offering, right? So it really tells us that this is for everybody. Okay, that's what that part of the ceremony indicates. The fact that it happens in church, that teaches that our offering is part of our worship. It's not just, well, we got to pay the bills. We like having a church. We like having a place to gather for worship. So, I mean, you got to pay for that. No, because if that were so, we wouldn't have to gather the offering on Sunday morning. Everybody could just mail in a check on Monday morning. But when we choose to make it part of the worship service, that teaches something. And then the fact that the plate is brought forward and the pastor, you know, holds it up, offers it, you know, this indicates that, again, the money is not just this, you know, utilitarian, hey, man, we got to pay the bills. Because, again, we could just say, you know, on a rotating basis, the Smith family is just going to get the water bill for church this month. And the Jones family is going to get the electric bill for church this month. And we'll just pass those around. And, well, no. I'm not paying the electric company. I'm not paying, you know. All of my offerings really are a sacrificial act of worship to the Lord. I'm giving those offerings to Him. And then, again, the fact that this is done in worship, there's this beautiful aspect of the position of the offering within the worship service. I mean, why does it come when it does? Why don't we do the offering at the very beginning of church? Why don't we do it at the very end of church? What is the point of the ceremony of having it between the service of the word and the service of the sacrament? Well, we hear the word, we respond to the word with our offering, and then now what we have offered to God comes back to us in the service of the sacrament, but transformed. The giving that we've given to God, which is, as God said to Adam, now you're going to make your living by the sweat of your brow. So the sweat of our brow, the bread that we've earned, which is now, you know, connected with the toil and sin of Adam, the bread of death, comes back to us transformed by God's word as the sacrament of the altar. In fact, in the ancient church, this was even more clearly seen, because part of that offertorial procession was not only the money offerings of the people, but even offerings of bread and wine, which would then be used for the sacrament. So my concern with whatever we do with the offering is if we're going to choose not to have those ceremonies, what's the point of a ceremony? It's to teach something. So if you're going to get rid of any one of those ceremonies, how are you going to teach those things?
We're talking with Pastor Heath Curtis about church offering plates post-pandemic on this Friday, April the 23rd. He's pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Warden, Illinois, and Zion Lutheran Church in Carpenter, Illinois, and coordinator for LCMS Stewardship.
I think we've reached a point where it requires a lot more work and actual discernment than it used to.
Journalist Mark Hemingway, speaker at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, July 23rd and 24th at Concordia University, Chicago.
Just because you read something in black and white does not mean that it's in any way reliable. And in fact, you should probably assume that the default media worldview is hostile to, say, a Lutheran worldview, and act accordingly in terms of verifying that information with multiple sources and using your best judgment in terms of who you trust and who you don't.
You can participate in a Q&A with Mark and Molly Hemingway at this year's Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th in Chicago. Attendance is limited. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or by calling 618-223-8385.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The New Testament includes four versions of the life, suffering, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, the Son of God and the Son of Man. We call these four different views on Jesus the four Gospels. Well, how do they relate to one another? Why do we have four different Gospels? How do they each portray Jesus in a unique way? Well, if you've asked any of these questions before, the Lutheran Witness, April issue of the Lutheran Witness, is for you. Pick up your copy at cph.org/witness or visit our website, witness.lcms.org, to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
What does it mean to live the Christian life? Reaching out in mercy to our neighbors, receiving our Lord's gifts in worship, and proclaiming His truth to the world. The Lutheran Church Extension Fund comes alongside churches and individuals to help them live out this beautiful Christian life every day. This year, we have a ripe opportunity to bring Christ to a hurting world. Discover the role you can play in this great work. Call 800-843-5233 or visit lcef.org.
I think that, you know, when the Lutherans embrace homosexual practices, they find, in quotes, Lutheran reasons for doing so. They will invent their own kind of theological rationale for it.
And if we're going to keep science from becoming a force for bad instead of a force for good, you have to have ethical rules.
But the Psalms then especially give us this gift, is that they take all of the all of our hopes and fears, all of our sorrow and our joy, and they bring it into the worship of the Lord Jesus and into the sanctifying power of His name.
That's what we're made for. Christians live on the rough edge and confess Christ.
Get ready to vote for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in 15 minutes. We're going to play four soundbites for you, one from Pastor Matt Harrison, one from Wesley Smith, one from Dr. Cameron McKenzie, and one from Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. Your votes will decide which will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. The listeners with the best vote will win the LPR bundle package. You vote by giving us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE, sending us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Pastor Heath Curtis is our guest. He is coordinator for LCMS Stewardship. Heath, why has online giving become so popular, and what are the pros and cons of that means?
Sure. I mean, I can certainly speak for myself. I love online giving. The pros are it's easier for the giver. That's the most obvious one. Does anybody under 45 use a checkbook for anything but property taxes, right, where you have to write a check? I'm infuriated if I'm standing in line at the store and somebody pulls out a checkbook. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Which is not a very Christian thing to think. But yeah, I do all my paying of bills and all my donations to charity and all my transactions are online unless they absolutely cannot be. And so all the giving that my wife and I do to church and to missions and everything else is all done through our bank's online system. There's another pro for churches and in teaching people about stewardship, and that is when you set automatic giving, it forces you to a decision point. You really got to think about this, and you set this up, and then you set it recurring, and okay. So this can really help in teaching a biblical model of giving, which is that I give a first fruits, generous proportion of my income. So that when I give income, I give a proportion of that to my home congregation and then above and beyond that to other missions, other alms, other things that I care about that serve the Lord's work in the world. So that's great. All my giving is done that way. And that it forces people to really think about their giving, make a plan, make a decision, step forward in generosity. And then also, when I'm on vacation, my offering goes in anyway. If I, we get up Sunday morning and two of the kids are puking their guts out and we can't go to church that day, the offering still goes in. So, I mean, that's great because it teaches you that my offering is based on my income. Whenever I have income, I have an offering for the church, whether or not I was able to make it to the Lord's house that day. So those are the great, wonderful things about online giving. The downside is, as I just talked about, I really don't want to lose that ceremony that teaches this is everybody's job. We do this. It's part of our worship. So churches that encourage online giving, and I certainly think our churches should, you need to take care that you find a way to teach the same thing that ceremony taught. And probably the easiest thing to do is, and you can find this on the LCMS stewardship page, lcms.org/stewardship, is we have little pew cards there that you can download for free and then, print them out, either at a, print them out really fancy at a local print shop or just print them on your own office equipment that says, I give online. And so when that plate is passed, people can drop that card in. So you keep that ceremony of passing the plate, or in these post-COVID days, a lot of congregations have gone to the old treasury box or offering box. So instead of passing the plate, there's going to be one box where people, as they come into church, drop their offerings in. That can do a lot of the same work as that old ceremony of passing the plate, teaching that, everybody does this. It's part of our worship. We do it at church. And again, people could put a card in there that indicates I give online. That's one solution to that. I do know some churches that have their own app. I serve two smaller rural congregations. We're not going to pay some company to lease an app from them, but at larger congregations, this can make a lot of sense. And they have, so people in the pews have an app on their phone, and you can make your offering on your phone during that normal time in worship when the offering is made. Great. But whatever a congregation decides to do, for all those pros and their extensive. I love online giving. don't lose the ceremonial teaching that the church has done since time immemorial with the public offering within the worship service.
One liturgical element that goes with the offering that has been omitted by many congregations because there's no longer a moment for the offering is the offertory, which is ordinarily kind of viewed by Lutherans as just a musical interlude, giving us time to go through the collection of the offerings. But it, you had mentioned earlier that it originally in the church had an additional purpose to it related to the Lord's Supper.
Yeah, and kind of on both ends. So the famous anecdote from Lutheran history about this is that Johann Sebastian Bach, the greatest Lutheran composer and church musician, when he would be playing in Leipzig, and this is his day job, he's making real money doing this, he never charged the church for the offertory. So the offertory, that piece of music was his offering. And it's also, it serves a very real purpose that this is the time in the church's worship while the table is being set for the Lord's Supper, while the offering is being collected. I mean, those things are connected. And then the offertory, the music that goes with that, is also a gift and is also ties together often the theme of the day to the offering, to the coming of the Lord's Supper. And so, careful church musicians and clergy really put a lot of thought into this. And oftentimes, we don't think about it. We don't realize all the things that are going on in worship. And that's why it's good to ask these questions and really think about the ceremonies that we use, the things that we do in church. Because if we don't periodically stop and think about them and talk about why we're doing this, we can lose the one thing about ceremonies we should want to keep, which is they teach people. So, so taking a time out to preachers would do well to think about, how am I going to communicate to people why we do what we do in worship? And that's certainly true about the offering and the offertory.
So you think even if a majority of parishioners give online and therefore aren't actually placing something in the plate, would it still be wise to keep the liturgical place of gathering and offering everything that we have been up to the online era?
Because how else are you going to teach that? What else are you going to do in worship to teach those points? The offering is something that everybody does, rich or poor. It's part of our worship. And look what God does with our offerings. We make offerings to Him, and it comes back to us in the ministry of the church. If anybody's got a better ceremony to teach that, I'm all ears, because ceremonies are about teaching. But I think there's a reason why, after centuries of practice, this is what the church has settled on to teach those lessons. So times do change. I don't know of any church that brings forward the bread and the wine anymore during the offertory procession. Well, we don't do that anymore. That ceremony changed in the church. Something has been lost that we don't do it that way, but we don't do it that way. Fine. How else are we going to teach the same lesson? So if you want to, this is the famous story of G.K. Chesterton's fence, a Chestertonian fence, right? G.K. Chesterton says, if a man comes across, he's bought a property and he comes across this fence, and he says, well, I see no reason why this fence should be here. Chesterton says he's the last guy on earth who should remove that fence. The only guy who should remove that fence is the guy who says, oh, I know exactly why this fence was here. It was here for this reason and this reason and this reason. But now I know that there are these other reasons. Okay, we can remove the fence. So I wouldn't want to remove any ceremony from worship unless I knew exactly why it was there and what I could do better to replace it.
Should we think beyond money when we think about the offering plate?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, anytime we talk about stewardship, that question gets asked, and it can be asked from two different angles. On the one hand, of course, our whole life is baptized. Everything about you and all your callings in the home, in the church, and in society those three spheres of life where God has called you to be his child, everything you do in that life is baptized and belongs to the worship of God. So as you seek to be a good father, a good mother, a good husband, good wife, as you seek to be a good citizen, all of that is part of your worship. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. On the other hand, sometimes we ask that question because we're just uncomfortable talking about money and the offering of money to the Lord's work in the church. So, you know, actually, the actual offering at church, that part is pretty much just about money, right? I mean, that's why we're doing it. Just about the money that is our offering so that the church can continue to do the work which God has given it to do. And we shouldn't shy away from that or make it seem like talking about money is somehow kind of off. It's Jesus who says, where you put your treasure, right? Don't store up treasure where moth and rust destroy. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Jesus has no problem telling people, taking his disciples and sitting them down in front of the temple, watching the offering box. I mean, Mark says that Jesus specifically took his disciples there. It wasn't an accident that they saw the widow with her mites putting that into the offering box. It says Jesus took them there to sit down and watch people do it. He wanted them to understand the importance of that aspect of our worship. And the very fact that we can kind of seem to be uncomfortable with it indicates that we should talk about it so that we can understand what the scriptures say about offering a portion of our livelihood to the Lord's work in the church, and that that is a vital and important aspect of our Christian life.
So let's answer the question raised by the RNS piece. Will COVID-19 be the end of the offering plate on Sunday morning?
I just don't think so, because I don't think any other ceremony can teach all the things that that teaches. Now, again, some congregations might do a box instead of a plate. Some congregations, so I'll put it this way. We're either going to have an offering plate, an offering box, or some kind of announcement, some kind of virtual offering box. I mean, it has to be a part of our public worship. It has to. It was in the day of Jesus at the temple. It was in the day of Moses. It was in the day of Paul, as he told the Corinthians, on the first day of the week, that is on Sunday, when you gather together, set aside something as the Lord has prospered you. It's a part of Christian worship.
You are the Director of Stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. What can you tell us about LCMS stewardship?
You can check out all of our resources at lcms.org/stewardship. But what I would really like to do is get out to your neck of the woods and come to your circuit, your district, and teach pastors and lay people a joyful, Lutheran, biblical manner of approaching this topic, which can sometimes be difficult. So if your congregation might be interested in hosting one of these events, send us an email, stewardship@lcms.org.
You'll find a link to LCMS Stewardship on the Talk on Demand Archives page at issuesetc.org, Managing the Gifts God Gives Us, LCMS Stewardship. Pastor Heath Curtis is pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Warden, Illinois, and Zion Lutheran Church in Carpenter, Illinois, and he's coordinator for LCMS Stewardship. Heath, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, it's time to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We got four soundbites to play for you, and after we've played them, you give us a call, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at IssuesETC, and our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC, facebook.com/IssuesETC. We'll play Soundbite of the Week on the other side of the break, beginning with soundbite number one, Pastor Matt Harrison, to Christians facing cancel culture. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is a devotional resource for middle school and high school teens titled Words of Strength and Promises. Topics include addiction, anxiety, being Christian, peer pressure, sexuality, and more. Learn more about Words of Strength and Promises at IssuesETC.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. A great confirmation and graduation gift, Words of Strength and Promises, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
This is a message for pastors and lay leaders of Missouri Synod congregations. As we're now rounding a corner on a year of COVID lockdown and measures, how has that affected your attendance and giving? In 25% of our churches, giving has actually gone up. Surprised? Why are some churches struggling while others are thriving? Here at LCMS Stewardship and the whole Office of National Mission team, we have answers and we have help for you and your church today. LCMS.org/stewardship.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. Simplyclassical.com.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Where doctrine is life. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. guest, Dr. Ben Mays of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Here's what Martin Luther says about the pastoral office. My pastor is practicing the virtue that increases God's kingdom, fills heaven with saints, plunders hell, robs the devil, wards off death, represses sin, preserves peace and unity, and plants all kinds of virtue in the people. In a word, he is making a new world. He builds not a poor temporary house, but an eternal and beautiful paradise in which God himself is glad to dwell. We are calling good men to step up. Come to Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Learn more about studying for the vocation of pastor at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.